Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 2nd, 2016. The head of JMAC tells the government and armed opposition to stop making excuses and form a transitional government now.
As a former central banker and as a former official at IMF, I know how difficult it is for the economy, but I plead with you to avoid ruin. Form the transitional government of national unity without further delay.
And the government reacts to a report that government troops suffocated 50 civilians in a shipping container.
Anything can be reported, but that may not be true. So this is why it requires investigation. Where did this happen?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Festus Mohai, is calling on the warring parties to form the transitional government of national unity without further delay. The former Botswanan president told government and opposition officials in Juba today that he is disappointed in the delay and the continued suffering of South Sudanese people. Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba.
Mohai says he is frustrated that the deadline to form a transitional government was missed last month.
This disappointment stems not only solely because of a day on calendar was missed, but because the potential, the opportunity, the possibility of a new government is so close, so vital for this country, that it must be taken. Every day we spend here, I think of the children I met growing up, without the chance of education, the chance of bettering their own lives, denied through no fault of their own. When will independence make a difference for these people?
Mohai says South Sudan, like other African nations, have lost generations of people to war. He says forming the transitional government will save lives and restore investor confidence in the country.
As a former central banker and as a former official at IMF, I know how difficult it is for the economy to be managed in unstable times. But I plead with you to avoid ruin. Form the transitional government of national unity without a further delay. Restore stability. Repair the damage that has been done before it is too late, so that urgent economic assistance can become available.
The South Sudanese pound falls sharply against the United States dollar since South Sudan's central bank devalued the local currency in December. This resulted in a surge of market prices, making food items unaffordable to most South Sudanese. JMAC released a timetable earlier last month requiring the warring parties to form a transitional government of national unity by January 22nd. That deadline has come and gone after the government created 28 states out of original 10, which the rebels said violated the peace deal. IGAD countries said in a communique released last weekend that a transitional government should be formed now, and the question of 28 states should be resolved later. Mohai says the parties should form an interim government this week and
agree on the urgency of introducing phased arrangements for the transitional security arrangements necessary for the capital city, and how the work of the other transitional security institutions can be accelerated.
Mohai says other political parties, including an umbrella called the National Alliance, should be represented in the new government. National Alliance leader Lema Akol, who is also the chairman of the SPLM for Democratic Change, welcomes the IGAD communique. Akol told reporters in Juba last night the Alliance hoped that the 28 states would be revoked by the government before forming the transitional government, but says the issue can still be resolved.
We believe that the compromise proposal by IGAD to suspend its operationalization for a month is something we can live with in order to salvage the peace process. We congratulate IGAD for reminding all of us to stick to the strict implementation of the peace agreement, as this is the only way to end the suffering of our people and keep the country united.
Information Minister Michael Makwe emerged from today's JMAC meeting to say both parties adopted the IGAD communique and that arrangements for Juba Town will be speed up.
We have agreed that within this coming short period, we need to work hard and ensure that the security elements from the IO are brought in, that the police of 1,500 for Juba Town and the police for the Greater Upper Nile of 1,200 are also brought in, and the other security forces of 1,410 all should be brought in as soon as possible, so that the vice president, the first vice president, comes in and the transitional government of national unity is established.
Makwe says this security is vital in order to convene SPLM in opposition leader Riek Machar to return to Juba. For VOA News, I am Philip Thona Leo in Juba.
JMAC recently released a report that said government troops killed an estimated 50 South Sudanese civilians by forcing them into a shipping container in Unity State on a hot day last October. The report detailed the latest atrocities in the conflict, including rape and murder, which JMAC says has been committed by both sides. The government says an investigation is needed. So far, there is no response from the rebels. Former South Sudan military spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer, now the governor of Jonglei State, tells VOA's James Bertie that many allegations occur during wartime.
No, I've not seen the report, but in such a situation, in a war situation, meanwhile allegations always come up. And the only thing to do is to go for verification and investigation to see where did the reporter found its report, so that on the ground you have to establish where exactly did this happen, who did it, and there's nothing I can say, but definitely that needs an investigation.
So who do you suppose, Colonel, to do the investigation, an independent body or your military will do the investigation?
Yes, that will include a neutral body plus the SPLA, the accused side, and the concerned bodies that are concerned of war in South Sudan. So an independent body has to be joined by the SPLA and the government of the Republic of South Sudan.
As you mentioned, this is a war situation. So is it possible that this could have taken place? And I mean, I know in a war situation, anything can happen. Is it possible it could have taken place?
No, anything can be reported, but that may not be true. So this is why it requires investigation. Where did this happen?
That's Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer speaking to VOA's James Bertie earlier today. A U.S. representative to the UN's Human Rights Council says the council will consider all options to bring about an end to human rights violation being committed in South Sudan. Ambassador Keith Harper says that President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will have to show leadership by forming a transitional government of national unity. Ian Bier has this report from Washington.
Ambassador Harper says one of the reasons the parties in South Sudan agreed to a ceasefire agreement in August is because of the pressure that the U.S. and other international bodies exerted on Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir. Harper, who is hopeful that both sides will form a transitional government of national unity, says any reluctance on both sides to implement the deal could push the Human Rights Council to raise the stakes.
We're not going to take anything off the table. And as you've seen, I think we have ratcheted up the pressure, whether it's through sanctions, individual sanctions. We will continue to look at those tools and see what is appropriate. Right now, we are trying to work with the parties to ensure that they live up to the agreements that they agree to.
The UN Human Rights Council sets international standards for human rights and monitors and implements those standards on the ground. The Human Rights Council uses research, education, public information, and human rights advocacy to shine a spotlight on atrocities and act as a political force to push countries like South Sudan in the right direction.
We recognize that those are not tools that are going to necessarily be sufficient in every circumstance, and that there may be other bodies that should take additional steps, like the AU. And the AU has tried to address this, and the regional organizations have tried to address this. So we recognize what our role is.
Harper says right now the council is trying to work with both parties to implement the peace deal. He says the council will have to decide if additional actions are needed.
What the United States is going to do is we're going to lead efforts to continue to focus attention on South Sudan. And sometimes that has the impact of forcing these countries to do better. We have to have political leadership in South Sudan. Riek Machar and President Kiir have to take a different tack.
The U.S. has donated almost $1.5 billion for humanitarian assistance since the start of the December 2013 conflict. Harper says the U.S. has made a significant investment in South Sudan and expects to see democracy as a return on its investment.
We're as frustrated about South Sudan as anybody. I mean, we were involved in the Troika in creating South Sudan, and so we have a lot of equities in making sure that it's successful. And when I say successful, I mean, is it secure and is it prosperous for the people of South Sudan, not for a handful of political leaders?
Last week's final report by the UN panel of experts in South Sudan cites the targeting and killing of civilians, recruitment of child soldiers, attacks on schools, hospitals, and religious sites, as well as beatings and sexual violence as examples of human rights violations that have been committed by both sides. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese lawyers say children's rights are not being respected in the country. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
How did you meet your romantic partner?
Actually, I met my partner when we were out on a symposium, inter-school debate competition. That's when I met her. I saw her performing very well in the debate. So after the debate, I had to approach her. We introduced ourselves. That was the beginning of our friendship.
Well, I met him back in high school. We went for a music event and things started from there.
I met my partner somewhere in the club. We met in the club. Yeah, of course, she was a waitress. But accidentally, I went to take beer after, you know, numbers passed, after phones, and then we started a relationship. Yeah, first, he was my friend. At the end, he became my partner.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about the Zika virus. The World Health Organization decided on Monday that Zika virus poses a public health emergency. The WHO said Zika is spreading explosively in the Americas. It says as many as 4 million people may be infected by the end of this year. About 20 countries have reported cases of the mosquito-borne disease. The virus could lead to birth defects, a rare condition that causes babies to be born with abnormal small heads. The Zika virus was first discovered in Uganda in 1947 and is named after a forest near Kampala where it was found. But Julius Lutwama, a virologist at the Ugandan Virus Research Institute in Entebbe, tells VOA's Joe DiCapua that Zika has never been a major threat in Uganda.
Zika virus was first identified in Zika forest, and it was identified while scientists were studying diseases of monkeys in this forest. In particular, they were trying to find out whether there was yellow fever in this particular forest. They used to put out monkeys in cages, and these were put on platforms in trees, and the mosquitoes would bite these monkeys and investigated to see whether the monkeys have got any infection. That is when this new virus was isolated. It was different from what they were looking for, and it was a new virus that had never been seen elsewhere. So it was given the name Zika virus.
Now, doctor, this was back in 1947, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So why, since then, has the Zika virus, in your opinion, not caused any major problems in Uganda?
There may be two or three possibilities. One of the possibilities is that it may be affecting people more often than we get to know. But because it is a mild infection, people don't take it importantly, and normally they don't go to seek medical assistance. The second reason is that while we have mosquitoes which may transmit the virus, these mosquitoes do not normally bite mom during the day. So they bite at night, and they bite at night in the forest, and people are not there in the forest. The Aedes aegypti, which we have, which bites man during the day, does not like to bite man. We have this strain that is called Aedes aegypti formosus, which normally does not bite man. It prefers to bite other animals. The third reason, of course, is that we have several other flaviviruses, and the flaviviruses are known to confer some kind of cross-immunity because people have brought other flaviviral infections, then they may be protected from getting Zika virus. The fourth reason is that we have a strain of Zika virus which is not virulent, which is not causing big problems like the one which has now spread to South America, because it has undergone some kind of changes through some genetic changes.
So in your view, the Zika virus that people are very concerned about now, that's prominent in South America, for example, is a virus that probably has mutated from the version that was originally found in Uganda.
That is what I have read, that there is some change in the genome. There's a slight change in the genome that it can multiply faster and better in humans than the original virus that was identified in Uganda.
As you know, the virus may cause birth defects in babies. And there's some speculation that this might be because of co-infections, such as West Nile virus or chikungunya, that the mother, the pregnant woman, might have these co-infections along with Zika. Do you see any possibility of those co-infections making it worse?
Well, probably it could. I believe if they get these infections at the same time, there is that probability. If they get it at slightly different times, there may be some kind of protection of one to the other.
Doctor, do you think the Zika virus spread from Uganda to South America?
No, I don't think that is true. It is not true that the virus has traveled from Uganda, because the virus is not only in Uganda. While it was first identified in Uganda, it is spread over a wide area in sub-Saharan Africa, and also in Asia. So there is the probability that it may have come from Asia, or it may have come from any other country in Africa where there is Zika virus. In 2007, there was an outbreak in Polynesia, and then I think it is from that area that it has moved towards Brazil.
Julius Lotwama is a virologist at the Uganda Virus Research Institute in Entebbe. He spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. We now move to Awil, where the state is expressing concern about the lack of juvenile courts and the practice of incarcerating children in adult prisons. For VOA News, Abraham Agod reports from Awil.
At least 35 participants selected from the police, wildlife, fire brigade, and prison services and civil society organizations participated in a two-day training aimed at educating the participants on human rights. Participants were particularly asked to respect child rights following several reports about children being detained in adult prisons in a Awil state. Kualdut, a parent, says his 12-year-old son was once detained in a Awil central prison after he lost someone's bicycle and was unable to pay back.
My son was imprisoned for 3 months. When I visited him in the prison, his health was not good. He had a skin disease and malaria. When he was released, he told me that prison is not good. There is nowhere to go and play.
Cole says he believes children should not be incarcerated with adults. He says state officials should establish a juvenile children's court as well as a correction center for juvenile offenders.
The condition of prison is not good for children. If there is special court and prison, it would be better, because children are put among the adults, those criminals who kill the people, and big women who make big crimes. This will be too difficult for children to stay together with these types of people who have such crimes.
Marco Carlo, the chairperson of the State Rule of Law Forum, who is also the director of legal administration at the state level, admits that children were being jailed together with adults in the area's main prison. A report released jointly by the government and United Nations Development Program 2.5 years ago said prisons across South Sudan are extremely overcrowded. Prisons and UN officials say there is a general lack of prison infrastructure. Most prison facilities across the country were built by colonial government back in 1920s and 30s and are now dilapidated. A picture book produced by the UN showcasing prison conditions in South Sudan indicates that a female, male, juvenile, and mentally ill inmates were all lumped together in a dirty, crowded cell. On top of that, there are few medical facilities for the mentally ill inmates. The book also highlights inadequate facilities for the female inmates with children. Lily Angui, the director of gender issues at the State Ministry of Social Development, says she benefited from the training because she gained knowledge in the content of the August Peace Agreement.
The workshop that I attended today is very important. It is telling us about the agreement, the peace signing. For us here on the ground, we are to be told and understand what is going on, the peace agreement. When we understand, and then we are the very people to go and talk to the community and tell them what is happening.
Isaac Dengathian, a legal aid expert, says majority of South Sudanese do not know their rights. He calls on legal officers to educate citizens on their rights and where to report in case their rights are abused. For VOA News, I am Abraham Goth reporting in Awil.
Now we move to Kwajok, where authorities in the newly created Gogorial State are releasing 17 inmates from the area's main prison to reduce overcrowding at the facility. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
The 17 released inmates include three females. Each of them were given 500 South Sudanese pounds, or about $17, to help them start a new life in their communities. Kwajoki State prison officials say most were sent to prison for things like theft and assault, but a few found guilty of murder. The inmates were freed after South Sudanese business tycoon Makir Guy offered his money to pay the fines of inmates who didn't have the money before they were jailed. Juma Doka Lega, the director of Kwajok Central Prison, says he is aware that releasing only 17 inmates will not solve the problem of overcrowding at the facility, but says it is better than nothing.
It is about 17 out of 168 to not solve any problem, because the number we should go to release today is 17. If you calculate it out of 168, it's still the conjunction in the prison.
Majin Mangong Manyang, who was imprisoned for murder after he got involved in revenge killings, says he is grateful that he is free after spending 2 years in prison.
I was prison here since 2013 up to now. And I'm very happy today for releasing of Makir Guy. Yes, I killed someone. That's why he put me in prison. To the people outside, my brother or my sister who is not in prison, don't do this one again.
Gokrial State Prison Service Director Justin Garang decries the poor services at the prison, where inmates have almost no water, food or medicine.
It is not a prison, because a prison, there should be a very strong fence and divided in so many divisions inside the prison, but nothing is there.
Last year, Makir Guy released more than 60 inmates from Wau Central Prison, as well as dozens of others from Awil Central Prison through the same initiative. The release of the 17 inmates cost 95,000 South Sudanese pounds. Authorities say they hope the former prisoners will reform and become good members of society. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
The South Sudan government says it is working on what it calls a robust plan to fix the damages done to the country's education system by 2 years of conflict. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Education Minister John Gayo says the government is aware of the damage done on the country's education sector and is trying to fix it.
First one is for us to finalize the curriculum,
by printing the books for the students. Number two, we need to open all our teachers training institute. We have to train teachers in South Sudan. Number three, we have to work hard to make sure that the management of our schools is stronger.
Guy was speaking at the start of a five-day meeting whose theme is developing a resilient education system. It is being attended by more than 200 education officials from across the country, as well as representatives of donor countries and organizations. A new ministry education report confirms the conflict has eroded most child enrollment in conflict-affected areas of the Greater Upper Nile region, which is composed of former states of Jonglei, Lakes, and Unity. Guy says the government will seek for extra funding for those areas.
We are going to have now what is called supplementary budget, because it's linked to the peace agreement. And this Minister of Finance working on it. It should be soon in the cabinet and then to parliament. Our partners have got a program called Education Emergency. Also, we are liaising with them.
He says the funds will be used for improving teachers' salaries and building more classrooms. MPs approved a budget of £10,642,000,000. The Education Ministry receives only 4% of that amount, only £678 million South Sudanese pounds for primary, secondary, and tertiary education. Speaking at the same function, Gender Minister Awut Deng Achui said she will be advocating for girls' education.
Are we looking at secondary school educations, that there will be girls boarding school that will only be purely focusing on the women, especially the girl child, to make sure that they are kept in school and they can proceed to university? That will be my key focus.
Gibson Francis Waru, an education activist from Greater Western Equatoria, says the government must ensure better welfare for teachers if the country's education program is to succeed.
The challenges actually we face is the number of teachers, because in primary schools, the teachers are lowly paid. So the salaries are not supporting. Many qualified teachers are moving from the education sector to organizations because there they are well paid.
Some primary school teachers are paid 300 South Sudanese pounds, or about $10 per month. Minister Guy says teachers, like any civil servants, will have their salaries increased in new salary structure that begins next month. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Nebni Baledna Together by Emmanuel Kembe. We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Nebni Beled Together. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Akir Mahatat.